Now, very simply, let me run through the litany of what happened in the 1990s in America. 1993, the World Trade Center was bombed. Osama bin Laden, who was an engineer, felt that if he placed this explosive at a particular place, one of the World Trade Towers would fall into the other, and he would be a big hero. But the parking attendant would not allow his emissary to park where he wanted to, and it blew out another side, killing 6 people and injuring 1,000. And the United States said, well, if you do that again, we're going to take you to court. And so in 1995, they bombed Saudi Arabia, killing 5 U.S. military personnel, and the United States did nothing. 1996, Khobar Towers bombed in Saudi, killing 19, injuring 200 military personnel. President of the United States at the time in the 1990s did nothing. 1998, bombing U.S. embassies in Africa, killed 224 and injured 5,000. This time, as our current president describes it, we took $1.5 million missiles, we sent them across over to the Sudan and Afghanistan to hit a couple camels in the butt. But other than that, we didn't. And then in the year 2000, they did something that no nation would ever think about doing. They bombed a United States naval vessel on the high seas, killing 17 and injuring 39 soldiers, and the United States did nothing. Until, 8 months later, they commandeered 4 airplanes for the purpose of decapitating the leadership of the United States. One into each of the World Trade Center towers, one into the White House, and one into the Capitol of the United States. If you've ever been in the cockpit of an airplane, you know you can't see down. And as they flew around 3 times over the White House, they couldn't locate it in the trees. They went into the alternative site, which was the Pentagon. The fourth one was planning to, well, let me just describe to you in the 9/11 report, that you've all seen the blue and white report. That was presented to the president about 3 weeks ago. Allow me to read to you 7 paragraphs. It says this. During at least 5 of the passengers' calls, let me just remind you. I mentioned about the World War II folks. We all sing the Star Spangled Banner, the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air. Do you remember why they had to shoot the rockets? The reason they had to shoot at Fort McHenry was because the men, not soldiers, not military, just Americans, determined that they knew that they were the largest seaport and the 3rd largest city in America, and then the enemy was going to come at them. And so what they did was took their own vessels, 22 of their own ships, and took them out and sunk them in the entrance to the harbor so that the ships couldn't get in to attack. And so they had to shoot all night long, and that's why they kept the flag up there. And as long as the flag was there, they knew that they hadn't accomplished it. And then when they got real quiet, Francis Scott Key got nervous. But what had happened is the same men of Baltimore had gone out and laid in the weeds because they knew that when they couldn't get in, they would have to do a land assault, and they're going to get them there. And in the process of doing that, they turned back and turned the whole edge of the war just because Americans loved freedom and they did what they had to do thinking on their own. Nobody commandeered them. Nobody gave them a uniform. Nobody told them what to do. That's what makes America unique. That's why more wealth is generated here than the rest of the world combined. That's why people want to find an American any place on the planet. There's a handful of folks that have a goal and a purpose to take your head and put it in your lap unless you understand that they are coming at us. No matter how much we said, oh, can't we get along? Just can't we get along? Weakness invites aggression. What it says is if you're not willing to stand up and fight, then I'm going to take more. I'm going to take more. I'm going to take more. And if I can take you, I can take your embassies and I can take your ships and brother, I can take you. And as long as you're going sit around and worry about it and not stand up to it, then that emboldens me. And one day they did that. And in the process, page 13 of the report, it says, during the last 5 of the passengers' phone calls, information was shared that the attack that had just occurred moments earlier on the World Trade Center. 5 calls described the intent of passengers and surviving crew members to revolt against the hijackers. According to one call, they voted whether to rush the terrorists in an attempt to retake their own plane. They prayed, they decided, and they acted. At 9:57, the passenger assault began. Several passengers had terminated phone calls with loved ones in order to join the revolt. One of the callers ended with the message, everyone's running to first class. I've got to go now. God bless you. Goodbye. The cockpit voice recorder captured the sounds of the passenger assault muffled by the intervening cockpit door. In response, Jara, piloting the plane, immediately began to roll it to the left and to the right, attempting to knock the passenger off balance. At 9:58:57, Jara told another hijacker in the cockpit to block the door. He continued to roll the airplane sharply left and right, but the assault continued. At 9:59:52, Jara changed tactics and pitched the nose of the airplane up and down to disrupt the assault. The recorder captured the sounds of loud thumps, crashes, and shouts, and breaking glass and plates. At 10:03, Jara stabilized the airplane. 5 seconds later, he asked, is that it? Shall we finish it off? A hijacker responded, no, not yet. When they all come, we will finish it off. The sounds of flying continued fighting continued outside the cockpit. Again, Jara pitched the nose of the aircraft up and down. At 10:26, a passenger in the background said, into the cockpit, we must do it now or we'll all die. 16 seconds later, a passenger yelled, roll it, and Jara stopped the violent maneuvers at 10:01 and said, Allah is the greatest, Allah is the greatest. He then asked another hijacker in the cockpit, is that it? I mean, shall we put it down? He replied, yes, put it down. The passengers continued their assault until 2:23. After 10, the hijacker said, pull it down now. The hijackers remained at the controls, but must have judged that the passengers were only only seconds away from overcoming them. The airplane headed down. The control wheel was turned hard to the right. The airplane rolled onto its back, and one of the hijackers began shouting, "Allah is the greatest! Allah is the greatest!" With the sounds of the passenger counterattack continuing, the aircraft plowed into an empty field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania at 580 miles per hour, about 20 minutes flying time from Washington, D.C. Jarrah's objective was to crash his airliner into the symbol of the American Republic, the capital of the United States. He was defeated by the alerted, unarmed Americans of United Flight 93.